Hello, my name is Ben Burrell and welcome back to Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that takes an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. Thank you very much for listening to Season 2. This is the final episode of Season 2. It's been a pleasure making these for you. I hope you've enjoyed listening to them. It's been a real pleasure, actually, because every single week we've gained listeners. There's always been more listeners than the week before, so thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for listening and streaming, and also everyone that's tweeted and Instagrammed as well. Speaking of which, if you want to let me know the albums you want covered during Season 3, which is coming out later in the year, you can do that. You can Instagram or tweet at Bob Dylan Podcast, or drop me an email via bobdylanpodcast.com. Without any further ado, let's get to it. Let's take a look at this album for the last time. This is the fifth and final episode on the classic record, 1964's The Times They Are Changing.
Oh, the time will come up when the winds will stop and the breeze will cease to be breathing, like the stillness in the wind before the hurricane begins, the hour that the ship comes in.
This record was Dylan's final all-out protest LP. And while at times it is a little short on entertainment, it does contain some of Bob's most important songs. Obviously, there's the title track, which has etched itself onto the cornerstone of modern music, but there's other stars of the show too, like, for example, track 9, The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll.
Williams and Zinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that he twirled around his diamond ring finger.
This is a complex and vivid protest song that is full of detail. In fact, this is probably what most protest songs should aspire to be, perhaps even more so than this album's famous title track. It not only describes and points out wrongdoing, like most good protest songs do, but it has a wonderful subtleness to it. There's some brilliant little touches that really make the lyrics come alive. The tune is an account of the killing of an African-American barmaid, Hattie Carroll, by William Zanzinger, who was a young man from a wealthy white tobacco farming family. Zanzinger would end up being convicted of a crime, but he'd only get 6 months in a county jail for assault. The lyrics paint a vivid picture of racism, which is laced all over the situation. It calls out the feeble punishment, as well as detailing the horrible act of the murder itself. Like songs elsewhere on this record, there's an obvious challenge to outdated views here. You have to remember, at the time, Bob was singing these songs in a country that still had segregation. The murder itself took place in the early hours of February the 9th, 1963. It happened at a white-tie spinster's ball at the Emerson Hotel in Baltimore. At about 1:30 a.m., after racially assaulting another staff member, Zanzinger turned to Carroll. He ordered a bourbon from her, and when it was not immediately delivered, he struck her across the shoulder and the head with a toy cane, as well as calling her the N-word. Soon after he attacked Carroll, he attacked his own wife, knocking her to the ground and hitting her with his shoe. Carroll left the scene immediately and in safety complained of feeling ill. She's quoted as saying, "I feel deathly ill. That man has upset me so." There's reports as well of her arm going numb and her speech changing. 8 hours after the assault, Carroll died. Zanzinger was initially charged with murder. His defence was that he'd been extremely drunk at the time and claimed to have no memory of the attack. His charge was reduced to manslaughter and assault based on the likelihood that her stress reaction to his verbal and physical abuse led to her hemorrhage rather than the blunt force trauma from the blow that left no lasting mark. On August the 28th, Zanzinger was convicted of both charges and sentenced to that 6 months' imprisonment. The song takes us on the journey every step of the way. In the first verse, we hear about the act. The second verse details Zanzinger's side of things. The third, we hear some more background on Carroll before the fourth deals with the trial. It's at this point on this podcast series I'd usually talk you through my interpretation of the lyrics of this song. But for once, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to use my words because someone has done a better job. This song has been analysed by Christopher Ricks, who is a British literary critic, a professor and a scholar who diehard Dylan fans might have heard of before. He also himself is a huge diehard Dylan fan. Ricks's analysis is so good that I wanted to use that here, as it pretty much says all I want to say. He points out that both the main characters' names have unstressed final syllables. This is often called a feminine ending. Or to put it another way, the stress is on the early parts of their names. For example, William has the stress on the W, Zanzinger on the second syllable, not the final one, and Hattie Carroll has both the stresses on the first syllables. This ends up making up the rhythm for the whole song, which is only broken at the end of each verse with that refrain about philosophizing disgrace. Dylan sings, "William Zanzinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that twirled round his diamond ring finger." Ring and finger having the stressed first syllables there, continuing the song's rhythm. He goes on to sing, "At a Baltimore Hotel Society gathering." Again, that stress on the early part of gathering. He even manipulates the words in the next line to fit this rhyme scheme as he sings, "And the cops were called in and his weapon took from him," not "took from him," "took from him," to continue that rhyme scheme.
"With a cane that he twirled around his diamond ring finger at a Baltimore hotel society gathering, and the cops was called in and his weapon took from him as they rode him in custody down to the station and booked Williams and Zinger for first-degree murder."
This is the case pretty much for the whole song until we hear details of Carol's death. Then Dylan shifts to a harsher sound, losing that feminine ending, signifying the horrible act of murder. It's almost like you can hear the murder within the lyrics. He sings, "Got killed by a blow, lay slain by a cane." Whereas before we had those sounds of finger and Carol, here they're dropped for the harsher cane and blow. Cane would be used instead of a word that fits that early rhythm, such as weapon. This is the only time we get that sound outside of the refrain, and it does a good job of subtly, almost subconsciously, bringing a blunter, colder rhythm, highlighting the fact the murder has just taken place.
"And emptied the ashtrays on a whole other level. Got killed by a blow, lay slain by a cane that sailed through the air and came down through the room."
After the death of Carol is detailed in the lyrics, we then have a beautiful harmonica solo, which is almost her swan song. Its sad, hushed tones are us saying goodbye to her as she leaves the scene for good. The next verse concentrates on the trial, with Carol seemingly long gone. The solo also, not for the first time in this album, acts as a little breather for the audience lost in those lyrics. A chance to reflect on the moment of horror that has just happened, almost like a movie when the scene fades to black momentarily after a big climax.
"Take the rag away from your face. Now ain't the time for your tears.
At the song's climax, during the big reveal of Zanzinger's punishment, Dylan pauses, albeit briefly, as he sings 6 months sentence, giving the slightest hint of drama and disbelief at the small amount of time given by the courts. Just like elsewhere on the album, this is done in a very undramatic way. The temptation would have been to have a big pause and a huge reveal of only 6 months, but in keeping with the times they are changing style, this is a cold and sterile delivery of the facts. It's almost too disillusioned for any emotion.
"And handed out strongly for penalty and repentance, Williams and Zinger with a 6 month sentence."
Interestingly, this is one of the few points in the song that features a proper rhyme. Again, it does happen in that refrain with the repeated "you-who" line, but in the proper verse lyrics, it's quite a rarity. Bob sings, "and handed out strongly for penalty and repentance, William Zanzinger with a 6 month sentence." This rare rhyme is really used to highlight that line to make it stand out as the story's big denouement. Along with that slight pause, it's almost like Dylan is saying to the audience, "and guess how long he got." There's another great little subtle moment in this song too. On verse 3, there's a repeated line about a table. It really sets the scene of Carol's monotonous long work shifts, working day in, day out, as Bob sings, "and never sat once at the head of the table, and didn't even look to the people at the table who just cleaned up all the food from the table."
"And never sat once at the head of the table, and didn't even talk to the people at the table who just cleaned up all the food from the table and emptied the ashtrays on a whole other level."
Sadly, Zanzinger wouldn't ever really pay for his crimes. He would end up back in jail, but that was for tax reasons. In 2001, he discussed the song for the book Down the Highway, The Life of Bob Dylan. He dismissed the tune as a total lie. He also expressed scorn for Dylan, somewhat ironically, demanding that he be thrown in jail. He said, "He's a no-account son of a bitch. He's just like a scum of a scumbag of the earth. I should have sued him and put him in jail." Sure, it's Bob that should be in jail. He died aged 69, with the world probably becoming a better place for it. The music on offer in this song is like elsewhere on the album in that it's pretty straightforward. Apart from that slightly shifting tempo, there's not really a lot going on here. It even lacks those hidden depths we looked at on the last episode. In fact, this is probably one of the most straightforward songs sonically on the entire record. The Sonics do shift up a gear on the album's next and final song, Restless Farewell.
Oh, all the money that in my whole life I did spend, be it mine right or wrongfully.
As we've seen many times when looking at Dylan's records on this podcast, Bob's final tracks usually offer some resolution or closure. They're often full of difficult emotions and questions, but there's almost always an ending of contentment or some relief. Highlands, for example, brought us to acceptance after Time Out of Mind's battle with mortality. Buckets of Rain found a more settled level-headedness that wasn't present elsewhere on Blood on the Tracks. And Ain't Talking provided a defiance at the end of Modern Times' Tales of the Past. However, on this record, we end proceedings without much closure at all. In fact, by the final track, the feeling of discontentment found throughout this record is worse than ever. For the last 40 minutes and 2 seconds, we've sat through tales of poverty, doomsday warnings, failed relationships and murder, and here with Restless Farewell, we say goodbye to all of that, but not by riding into the sunset away from it, more by being overwhelmed by it. It's a twitchy goodbye that sounds like our narrator is so sick of the world around him that he no longer wishes to be part of it. The lines read like a suicide note as he addresses people and things from his life like it's the last time he'll ever speak of them. He sings, "Oh, to every girl that I've ever touched, I did not do it harmfully. And to every girl that I've ever hurt, I did not do it knowingly.
Oh, every girl that ever I've touched, I did not do it harmfully. And every girl that ever I've hurt, I did not do it knowingly."
Every verse in this song is aimed at a particular part of our narrator's life. It mirrors what was going on in the title track. There, Bob addressed senators and writers and critics. Here, though, it feels a little more personal. We hear him turn to the women of his life, his foes, and his own thoughts.
Oh, every thought that strung a knot in my mind, I might go insane if it couldn't be sprung. But it's not to stand naked under unknowing eyes. It's for myself and my friends, my stories I sung.
On the last verse, we hear lines about dust, which continues that feeling of death. There's also lines elsewhere depicting defiance, as Dylan sings, "I'll make my stand." However, unlike the defiance I mentioned on a track like Ain't Talking, this feels more bitter and hopeless than a big act of retaliation. The lyrics in this final verse also feature allusions to rumours, which could give us an indication of Dylan's headspace for this song. By this point, he gained quite a bit of notoriety as a protest singer, and what comes with that is a type of attention. Fans, critics and the general public alike had read his lyrics and wanted to know what they mean and what they were trying to say. This was made even worse by the fact that Bob was singing about issues that were red hot at the time. Dylan would be subject to comment, criticism and questions over almost everything, something that would really continue for the rest of his career, becoming especially bad during that 1965 tour of England, having just gone electric, something that is depicted on the Don't Look Back documentary. With this song, you feel Bob is so tired of the protest song and everything that goes with it. He sings, "And the dirt of gossip blows into my face, and the dust of rumours covers me.
And the dirt of gossip blows into my face, and the dust of rumours covers me. But if the arrow is straight, and the point is slick, it can pierce through dust no matter how thick."
It's pretty telling that this is the last song on the last overtly protest song album. You get the impression this was almost like his great work. He'd suffered for his art and was now mentally drawing a line under it. Artists have their periods or phases, and here Bob is publicly putting an end to one of his. I also get the slight impression that his heart might have not been in it fully either, for the reasons I've just stated. Don't get me wrong, I think Bob fully believed in the causes he was singing about. I genuinely feel he felt he could make a difference, but that quote we heard about in episode 1 from his friend Tony Glover about the times there are changing lyrics, and upon seeing them, Dylan saying, well, you know, it seems to be what people like to hear. Perhaps he felt obliged to write protest songs, as that was what people expected of him, and by this song, which was recorded at the end of the sessions, he was failing to keep up the act, or as he puts it in the final lines of the song, not give a damn.
So I'll make my stand and remain as I am and bid farewell and not give a damn.
This could offer another reason for his complete dismantling of that type of song from preceding albums. Either way, this is a definite goodbye, not only to the record and not only to the protest song, but to a whole period of Bob's music. He finishes it with a sigh and a grimace. This album is one of Dylan's strongest. In fact, I'd argue it's his most focused and consistent in terms of a themed record. Every song has that undercurrent of woe I've mentioned many times when looking at these tracks. They all feel like they're related in some way, like they're coming from the same place. The protest song is obviously a big part of this record, but the thing that ties the whole LP together is that general feeling of jaded exhaustion at the wrongs in the world. However, the very thing that makes the record is also the very thing that stops it from being Bob's best. This is not a lovable album. It's not a comfortable record like Nashville Skyline. It doesn't feature any fun songs, and it certainly doesn't spark excitement like Desire. This is like a teenager coming to terms with the world they're not impressed with, trying to change it, and ultimately getting disillusioned by it. However, it is fitting that Bob's final protest album would be his most focused attack. He'd leave the debate with a damning comment on the world and its future before slipping out, never to be back again.
So take heed of the western winds. Take heed of the stormy weather. And yes, there's something you can send back to me. Spanish boots are Spanish leather.
That is it for this episode and for this season. By the way, just before I let you go, the Christopher Ricks analysis I mentioned and used in this episode is available online too. It's definitely worth a listen. He goes into much more detail than I did here. I don't agree with everything he says, but he has some amazing ideas and some amazing ears to analyse songs like this. It's genuinely fascinating. I'll put a link to that bit of audio in the description to this podcast. As I say, it's more than worth 10 minutes of your time. All that's left for me to say is thank you once again for listening to this season. I will see you for season 3 later in the year. Until then, goodbye.